Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John explores his days as a youth pastor and reacts to his Christmas gift by shooting the bird. Meanwhile, I try out a new joke and ponder why certain people like pranks and others don't. Plus, a conversation about what really makes for an effective sermon. Today's episode is not sponsored by Political Fights with Your Family. When you've had enough peace on earth and it's time to call Cousin Bobby a socialist while eating a turkey dinner, try Political Fights with Your Family. But first, a word from our actual sponsors.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Is the season to be jolly, Johnny. It's Talk About That. Another week. You think we take Christmas off? No, sir. We're here.
Our families are furious.
We're here to teach you how to neglect all the loved ones in your life.
Yes. We'll be visited by three spirits just this very evening.
By the way, speaking of, and I sent something to you.
Yeah.
Have you watched Spirited on Apple TV Plus?
No, you told me that I need to see it. And that you were really, you loved it a lot.
I mean, I don't know. See, here's the thing. I was with, I had some dinner with friends last night.
Yeah.
And they just didn't care for it that much.
They were underwhelmed.
I was aghast.
So you feel like you oversold it.
Well, no. But then I found out they don't like Hamilton either.
Oh, you liked the whole, the big production value of it.
That's the thing. Like, if they don't like Hamilton, I was like, well, I didn't even know why we're friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, this, if I'd have known this, this would have changed everything.
Yeah.
It really is. So, I mean, I think you see Will Ferrell on, you know, a billing of a movie and you assume, oh, well, this is going to be slapstick, stupid stuff, you know. I was like, I was inside your inner
monologue. That was your, yeah.
Right there.
I don't like that impression of me.
But.
It's hurtful.
Truthfully, I thought it was really, really well written.
Spirited, not a sponsor, but.
It was like Inception meets a comedy Christmas musical.
I don't think it's like that at all.
It was. It was like, see. I don't want to give it away.
Okay, don't. Because I'm going to watch it. I'll check it out.
You and need to watch it.
I can't wait to come back.
You're going to be critical.
Yeah, because you've oversold it.
That's what you do. Like, you and Dane both do that, our friend Dane. You're very much like, if we tell you you should like something,
yeah.
Then you're like, you know what? I'm not going to like it. You don't even know what it is yet. Instead of being like, you know, my friend wanted to share a wonderful experience with me.
Yeah.
I just want to ruin
that. Are there
that
things
experience.
That you, that are traditionally considered great pieces of art that you don't like, or you just go along with the pack? You go, okay.
Oh, so you tell think this me, is like a uniqueness?
I want to see what you like. Are you just like, yeah, I accept it. The Mona Lisa is beautiful. Or are you to go, I don't get it. Are there things like that?
Absolutely. I don't get most visual art.
Okay. Like, in that you can't see it or understand
like,
it?
Like, guys, I need new glasses. No, I'm not a... No, I would go to an art museum.
Yeah.
It's fine. I can appreciate...
Like Jackson Pollock, if you just saw it, you just go, this is a bunch of splatters.
Yeah.
I don't see why he's considered a genius. Is that what you would say?
I do see things that
Jackson
I think,
Pollock is on the show today. Come on in.
I do see things that I go, yeah, I think I've seen kids in my youth group who spilled paint.
Right.
Know? So I think truly beauty is in the eye of the
like
beholder.
Like Picasso, no who was famous in his lifetime, one of the few artists that...
Picasso, I think, is pretty brilliant, the impressionist stuff.
Yeah, but...
Wait,
the weird
is Picasso impressionist?
He had the weird, yeah, I think so. He had the weird eye on the side of the, I don't understand. The way he drew faces.
Yeah.
I used to have a joke about that, and it's one of those, I call it a Venn diagram joke, because you have to be adept at two things to get the joke.
Right.
So the Venn diagram of people who get it, it's a tiny sliver of people.
Right in the middle, yeah.
And the joke was, I think if Picasso was a football coach, he would have preferred the offset eye formation. That's a great joke.
You got to know
football. But you have to know football and you have to know Picasso.
Yeah.
And that's like four people.
Did you try it?
Oh, yeah.
And did?
I tried it enough to be like, I got to stop trying this. Sometimes.
Well, maybe you could just tell them, hey, you probably did tell them, like, hey, there's probably a small number of people here.
That's how I need to set it up from now on. Like, only the smart ones will get this one.
And everyone like, laughs like that. They,
right.
Yeah.
They get their theater laugh.
Googling down
yeah,
below.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What is an offset eye formation slash Picasso? No, I don't get, like, there's some movies. Like, I'm trying to think of some movies that you would love.
Like, would you just be like, you're not a Star Wars hater.
I love Star Wars.
You love Star Wars. But it's not like a religion to you. Like, some people treat Star Wars like, you ruined my childhood if they do a wrong move
I
for
you.
I am
an episode 1, 2, 3 hater.
Okay.
Just, you don't think I'm critical enough of anything. John, if you want to hear my critique of you, we got an hour.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Something that's traditionally beloved by most people.
Right. Everyone else thinks.
That you want to go ahead and shoot down. You'd be like, you just don't know him. Like I do.
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to think. There's things I don't care for.
Like pop music you're into now. Because like you said, you talk about listening to pop music with Sadie all the time. This is the age where you should be saying they don't make good music anymore.
And I like it.
But you're listening to it with your daughter and you dig it.
I think that's because I'm young at heart.
No, it's not that.
I'm a little progressive. So like the new Taylor Swift album?
Yeah.
Have you listened to it?
The hits, the ones that have been on radio.
Like, I'm not a Taylor Swift hater.
Right.
Like,
No.
I think she's a brilliant writer.
You know what? I used to be more so because I felt like her voice had not really matured and she was very pitchy in some of her live performances. So either she's got somebody pulling those notes live now or she's just kind of grown into her voice. Either way, I think she's become a way better performer now.
I think she grew into it somewhat. And I also think that a lot of performers are pitchy live.
Yeah.
And that
well, they're singing 300 Days a Year. That's part of it.
She got extra hate. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, it's Christmas time, so it's time for this annual return to this debate.
Yeah.
But I've already heard haters of Mariah Carey, and because it's like Mariah Carey doesn't get to get older, and her voice doesn't get to change.
Yeah.
As the greatest
voice of her.
She has
to be this perfect
pop generation.
Locked in carbonite version of Mariah Carey that you remember.
Now, to her haters' defense, she keeps going out to do the big, like she has another Christmas special coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So she keeps going on New Year's Eve or whatever in the cold in a tiny dress or whatever to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure.
You think that has anything to do with the pitch of her voice, John?
I think that if when I'm cold.
Right.
I don't sing well in perfect conditions. You put me and you used to remember that time we did that Christmas tree lighting or whatever out at the park spring.
Yeah, and you were like, put on this tiny dress, and I was like, I don't feel good about this.
but like we were freezing, and it affects your voice. Like if you're sucking in cold air.
I was nervous too, probably because Christmas carols is a whole thing. Like I have to sing Christmas carols at. So my family founded a group home when I was a little boy.
Right. Agape
and my brother, Agape Outreach Homes, and my brother still runs that program. So it's been like 2 years since I've come to do their Christmas party and because of COVID. But now I'm going back. He goes, you got to come back. So it's on the 23rd and we're going to go open. Tons of presents for these guys. It's amazing. And but I have to sing Christmas carols. And Christmas carols are really hard on the guitar. Like every word is another chord change.
Right.
We three kings of Orient are. That's eight chords. And so it's really crazy and thematic and very dramatic changes. And so I'm just not that kind of player. I'm just going to hold this G for a minute and sing. And so I have to learn these songs. I'm nervous about that even.
Yeah.
So if we're in the park and it's our big moment, there's no way I wasn't like nervous. But then you add the cold to it. Yeah. I'm sure we were not in good shape.
No.
Then the outfit.
So give Mariah Carey a break. Like
I do.
She remains.
Here's the thing. Here's what happened with Mariah Carey. I think what happened with the first time that she had the little voice fail at the whatever parade, the Christmas parade where she was on the float. And she kind of, didn't she scold her backup dancers or something? There was some moment where she scolded the monitor mix or something and she came off as a diva. Then she hit a flat note. I think that's what did it.
I thought it was New Year's Eve with Ryan Seacrest where she was like, can I get some hot tea or something up here? Like in the middle of the song. She was obviously losing her voice and asking like, can those of you who, you know,
I'm misremembering.
I pay a bunch of money to work. Can someone please bring me a glass of water? So you can tell it's not going well. And that made her look like it. I don't know. I don't know.
But I mean, that's the thing is she is a diva. Like she... Like, we coined that term in the 90s for, like, Celine Dion, a few other people. Like, they're the divas. But
now
diva,
it's like, how dare you be a diva?
Right. But, like, we gave them that Yeah, that's okay.
That's why you stopped wearing the dresses.
It is.
You were tired of all the criticism. And that brings us back full circle, doesn't it, to what this is really all about, criticizing Johnny, which is the name of my new podcast.
I just want to lose enough weight to fit in that elf costume.
Oh.
Curry gets so excited every year.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you don't wear costumes for Christmas. You know what? I did wear a Santa hat to the party the other night just to lighten the mood, Johnny. Just to lighten the mood. And I think it worked. People walked in. They were immediately put at ease.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You don't think so?
I think they were probably, thrown off by it because you're just not, I think you're perceived as a really good person. I don't know if you're perceived as a really fun person.
That hurts, man.
You know?
You don't think I'm
like John's going to put on a wacky hat and join us.
You don't think I'm like jocular in the eyes of my peers?
I love you so much, John. I don't want to hurt you.
It's true that, like, even as a youth pastor, I wasn't the game guy.
Right.
But I could do it because they would make me the game guy for the whole week of camp or whatever.
Did you grow up with games in your youth group?
Yeah.
Do you think that you rebelled against that?
And I would play those games now, like the rhythm game or the pass these sticks crossed or uncrossed game.
I'm saying, do you think, because you rebel against what you grew up with sometimes when you become a minister yourself, right. Do you think that's what happened? You're like, we're going to be serious in here. We're going to get closer to God. We're not going to do this game stuff where we play chubby bunnies and a kid almost dies.
That question is so good. It deserves to be covered in depth right after this short break. I think that perhaps you're on to something, that I wanted to be the youth pastor that.
Yeah.
Made the time worthwhile.
Okay. But you wanted to be, oh, Captain, my Captain,
but
Dead
really,
Poet Society. You unlocked the Bible, as it were, for these kids in a way that their other, you know, people had not. You wanted to be that guy. They stand on their desk for you.
Maybe. I think that the truth is, it's hard to say. I just don't think I was very confident. I think I'm insecure about leading the game because I know it's not my natural.
Yeah.
Disposition. Now, I'm a fun guy. I would argue this.
Okay.
I have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But it's with words. Like, so Laura and I.
Ooh, word fun.
Laura and I stayed up till like 1 a.m.
doing the jumble.
Like,
is that what you?
We were watching Netflix or something. And it was after the staff party. And like, we're just laughing and talking and like doing funny accents because we watched 1923 came out. Which is another now prequel to Yellowstone.
This all sounds just raucous
far. I'm not endorsing Yellowstone. It's a lot of violence and other things, but they do these period history pieces.
They got to stop naming them after years. It just makes me just immediately want to, you know, not watch.
That's what I love about it.
Like, it just sounds like it's going to be a History Channel show. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a...
It's got Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Like... Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, and so, but they.
Who is 1923 at this point?
So they they have this girl that from 1883 who is supposed to be a Southerner because Tim McGraw and Faith Hill, they're the main characters in 1883, and this is their daughter. So I don't want to give it away, but she's like the narrator. And if Laura were here today, if you've ever watched 1883, because it is a very thick put on. It almost sounds like a Charleston Southern accent.
Yeah.
And it's very not what you would think probably of the time. It's a little overdone, probably.
Yeah.
And she does it to a T. Now, you try to get her to a British accent, it's worse than mine.
No.
But this one, like even her dad who watches the show, he'll be like, oh my gosh, like you sound exactly.
Yeah.
And so she'll start talking.
Right.
In the bed, and she can go on for like 15 minutes just saying all kinds of ridiculous things that girl might say.
Hey, let's keep this G-rated.
About the stars, John. About the grass, about the air, about the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And she does it in that accent, you know, as if she's narrating. I swear, you could put it on the show.
Yeah.
And it's pretty close to what they're doing. So, point is, I enjoy like things to think about, talk about. We did play games at the staff party. We played Family Feud, but you know what I did?
You put on a mustache like Steve Harvey and...
I got our resident Enneagram type 7, who the 7's the, you know, the adventurers.
Okay.
You know. I got Andrew Wharton.
Yeah.
Who's all about it.
Right.
You want a game.
You got him to host?
So I got my older lead pastor.
Right.
Supposedly I'm the younger guy who was the youth pastor. But I'm like, bro, I need you to bring the fun. Like, we're doing the food. We're getting everything ready. We're going to have a nice night. Can you bring the entertainment? And he shows up.
Andrew's fun.
They had a great time.
There's no doubt about
Andrew's
it.
Andrew's a fun guy is what you're saying. And he's fun. Wish I was more like him.
I want you to be exactly what you are, but also realizing you're not that fun.
Exactly who you are and realize it's not enough. So that's pretty much the message I hear all the time.
It's fine, John. No. Listen, I don't know.
I got to be who
you're
I
not,
am.
You're not impish, though. Like, you're not a prank. Like, I'm not a prankster either, though. People talk about pranks all the time. I think people assume that I'm a prankster because I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
But I would never even think to prank people because I feel bad for people who are being pranked.
Right.
I think it's because I was pranked.
Yeah.
Like, I'd have my shoes tied together when I was on the basketball team. We'd be on the bus ride over. And then, you know, I'd kind of like nod off. And then when I'd wake up, my shoelaces would be. And I thought, why would people do this?
It's just mean.
It is. So I never wanted to do that to people. So when I see these, we talk about that, what the prank shows, like, I get off put by it. Like, yeah. You're trying to make a fool out of this person while the cameras roll. I feel bad for that person. You're monetizing it. You're monetizing their shame. So I just don't, I don't know.
It's just an interesting dichotomy with you because someone who makes fun of things for a living.
But I make fun of myself a lot.
Right.
Too. You know,
and your
at, this,
close
at this point, it's probably 50-50 in the show of like, I'm the idiot in most of my jokes.
Well,
and so I'm the idiot in all of my jokes.
Yeah, that's because
but the other ones I just give another name to.
Real life is the funniest stuff. I don't know
it's
what
true.
You want.
But I think too, like my first job. Like, your first job was working for your dad. Did people prank you in the mowing business? Did y'all prank each other?
There's no time for that. We're working. And that's probably why I don't do games.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to get at it,
it's
there's
all
no time
like,
for this.
It's
there's
all like
work
time
to be
management.
Done.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Definitely, your work is important to you.
I mean, dad
job.
Was jovial.
Let's
and
get
fun.
Into it. Yeah. John, why do you think accomplishments. Are you still trying to please your father?
You're the one on the couch right now.
That's true. No, but here's the other thing. My first job, real job, was a movie theater. They pranked you there.
Yeah.
They'd make up jobs
right.
that weren't jobs. I talk about it in my show about yeah. how they would be like, get a bucket of water. And then they would say, fill up the drinking fountains.
Right.
And I'd be like, what? And I go, and then somebody would do it. Somebody would always do it. They'd get somebody that was young enough that didn't know that they were automatic, and they would pour 5 gallons of water down the drain of yeah. an automatic drinking fountain. And you'd laugh, and then they'd say, let's go turn the rocks on the roof. That was another one. You climb up on the roof. They go, it's getting too hot. We got to turn the rocks on the roof.
And I've never heard
I'd climb up there behind them, you know, as the older person.
And they like, lock you on the roof.
Well, they do that, but first you kind of, you wait for them to bend down and touch the first rock, and then we'd all just bust out laughing because they're really going to do it. Like, they think you have to turn the rocks or they'll burn through the, what I don't know what we convinced them that it was the reason for it, but it's like a flat roof with all those rocks on it, you know?
Yeah.
You got to go turn those rocks.
You know, I did prank in, I remember, that reminded me of something.
What's like that?
When I was at Governor's School for the Humanities, which was like a thing when you're a junior, you get to, if you get picked, you get to go away to college for a month.
Yeah.
In the summer.
I like how you said, like, when, you know, when you're a junior, you get to go to this thing.
No,
like,
that's
it's,
the point. Like.
Not I'm everybody not, had your experience, John.
I'm trying to
We didn't
help
all
them.
Go to Hogwarts. Okay? We know you're very special.
I'm saying,
okay.
Imagine being a high schooler with the freedom of a college student for yeah. a whole month. It was like a year.
Yeah, it's too much.
And it was at UT Martin. No, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Because you don't get any actual grades.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to actually work a job. Like, it's like all
this
the,
feels like my everyday life right now.
It's like all the best parts of in college without any of the pressure, you know?
Yeah.
So we did all kinds. You could stay up as late as you wanted, and we had supposedly people watching us.
Like watching you.
Well, the adults, because we were minors.
Okay.
But we pretty much.
Like a chaperone or whatever.
As long as you were back in your dorm by the right time, we just roamed all over the Martin campus. And,
yeah.
You know, we did go to classes and stuff, but anyway. And so I remember I took a group Skype hunting.
Oh, Snipe hunting. Not
what
Skype.
Did I say? Wow, Skype.
Skype hunting.
Skype hunting's like, I can't get signal.
It was before Skype, so you
was,
knew you
yeah.
were a, yeah, man.
Snipe hunting, thank you.
Yeah.
And I had a.
This is how fun you are. You don't even know what it is. Okay. You're like,
it's been
what
years.
Do we call it? Yeah.
I had a, hold on, let me see if I can still, I can't do it anymore. You pull those fingers together. Could you make this noise?
No, never could. I could do the thing where you put the blade of grass in there. And you get it to be a little reed for you.
My hands don't work. I used to. I can put my hands together and make this whistle.
Yeah.
And people, they seriously.
They thought it was a snipe, a wild
yeah,
snipe.
Yeah, we had like multiple groups.
On
I'd organized them into multiple search parties.
Yeah.
And had them going out.
Right.
And they, you know, and we'd make noise over here and they thought they heard it, you know. So mm-hmm. that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody really got shamed.
I remember one time
anything.
We were at camp working on something, because we would always get pegged to do the camp theme. Hey, take 5 of your days and come to the camp. And, you know, we did American Gladiators one year, and I built all these sets and games for the kids and stuff. And I remember I was there with your brother-in-law, Greg, and we're talking, and he goes, we had kids with us, you know, like teenage kid, 13-year-olds. And then one of them, Greg goes, tell this kid that you cut the board too short and he needs to go find the board stretcher. And I never would have thought of that. I didn't grow up like with tools and stuff. Like, my dad wasn't handy. So I was just like, that's pretty good. So, I mean, I sold it. I go, yeah, go over and ask John for the board stretcher. It's over there in my bag. Kid goes, okay. And he just walks off, and he was gone a long time.
Who was the kid?
I don't remember. But he was gone a long time. He goes, he said he left it in his other truck or whatever. Like, you had carried it over. You know, you didn't just go, what are you doing?
Right. Oh, no.
Yeah. So that's as close to a prank. Yeah. And that was Greg's idea. It wasn't like, oh, I'll get this kid. Yeah. I just don't think that way. And again, it's my second job was even worse, because it was a total, like, really macho culture. It was Home Depot.
Right.
So it was just completely immersed in pranking each other. You had ex-military guys there. You had all these guys who
it's just almost like hazing.
It is. It's like college hazing. And I'm new. I'm this green kid. I mean, I was homeschooled. The whole thing. I mean, they saw me coming like beaver cleaver. So I come in, and they would do horrible stuff to each other. They had one guy there who I can't believe he didn't quit. There's a thing called shrink wrap, you know, you shrink wrap things. Yeah. And we had rolls of it, because they would shrink wrap things to pallets and put them in the overhead. They shrink wrapped this guy to a pallet of water heaters and put him in the overhead overnight one time.
No.
Yes. Like, lights out. And I was like, that's assault.
Yeah.
but they would, if it was your last day, you would come out and your car would be shrink wrapped.
How do you go to the bathroom?
John, I don't know. Ask a NASCAR driver. You know, you just go.
Wow.
And then you hope it evaporates.
Wow.
But anyway, they shrink wrap your car your last day of a job like that.
And that's a big thing.
You
got to
cut your way into your car, basically. You got to take a knife and try not to cut your paint job. But they just do weird things. There would be, you'd walk to the break room, and there's phones all throughout, you know, to like customer service phones.
Right. But no one ever uses them.
No one ever uses them. Yeah, exactly. So you would be walking, and if you hear a customer service phone ringing, you're supposed to pick it up and be like, hello. And they go, there's somebody wanting a price on a water heater or whatever. And you look up, and then Terry's tied to the water heater. No, but you would have to answer it, because that's kind of like they're checking on you to see if you're – sometimes you don't know. There's people who are like customer service, people who are watching. So you'd always answer it. And so you're on the break, on the way to your 15-minute break, you're like, please don't ring. And it would ring, and I'd pick it up sometimes, and the receiver would be covered in hydraulic oil. They would take oil from the – when you raise the cherry picker, there's oil all down those pistons. They would take it and wipe it on the receiver so that when you picked it up, just oil running down your – and they would go to the other side of the room and call that line, knowing, and they could walk, see who we get, and they'd reel you in. And that was their game there. And I was like, this is a toxic workplace.
Literally, the oil is toxic.
Yeah. But so I just think, I don't want to be that. Some of y'all are like, these are good ideas.
Somebody's taking notes right now.
They are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate that we haven't done a lot of pranking in our
I don't think you could take it.
No, it's just a waste of energy. You know, in my therapy and in my recovery, this thing came up in both.
Yeah.
Avoidable pain.
Okay.
Things that could be avoided are like my trigger.
Right.
Like, if something happens you can't avoid.
Right.
I mean, quite honestly, I'm probably better with I'm trying to be insensitive here, but, you know, if something, an ice storm comes and my car slides into a ditch and it's totaled.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't control an ice storm. You know what I'm saying? But like, if there is something, if I happen to be looking down the other way and slide into a ditch when I should have been driving, you know, then now,
right?
Not only is it avoidable, but I'm responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like for me. I don't want to be. It's about avoidable pain. So pranking is avoidable pain.
Right. And the risk of like hurting people, you don't want to ever hurt. You want to do no harm. That's a ministry concept as well as medicine.
I see every spill on every floor and think someone's going to fall as it is. Yeah. So the idea is going to go too far and someone's going to get hurt, you know.
Yeah.
Well, these are really nerdy things we're saying.
That's okay.
you're proving the point that I'm maybe not as fun as I thought.
I think you're fine. Listen, it's not an insult. I just, you know,
the truth.
I just want you to think about it for the rest of your life.
See, again, I enjoy the words. See, that's fun for me. What you just said, that was fun.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that you talk about this stuff to your therapist, because I don't know how to tell you this, but your therapist isn't real. I hired him. It's been a long con.
That would be amazing, because
but like, even in gym class, I remember gym class, I was so uneasy and unsure of myself, and that's where like pranks live, or like just hazing in general, like I'm gonna go pants this kid, or I'm gonna throw a dodgeball as hard as I can at his face so I can make a girl laugh. Like, that's where that stuff grows in you, and those apprehensions begin to start growing, where you're like, I don't ever want to make somebody feel this way.
Yeah.
And I did, by the way, and I tell you, I did this event in Texas. It was my last event of the year in early December, and it was it was called Tapered. And I was like, what is Tapered?
This is a long acronym.
The longest acronym ever. Texas Association
or
Acrostics. Acronym. Because it's, Acrobat. Anyway, Texas Association of Physical Health Education, Recreation, and Dance.
Wow.
Yeah. They threw dance in there. So they had me come do their conference in Corpus Christi, Texas.
And dance?
And dance.
But didn't end with an E-D?
It's a Tapered. T-A-P-H-E-R-D.
So it just left off the and.
Well, it's...
Because then it would have been Tapered.
Listen, I'm not going to speak to their acronym and what it could have been.
This is an irresponsible acronym or acrostic, whichever one it is.
It looks like Tafford, actually. Tafford. Anyway.
Sorry. Go ahead.
They were super cool, but I was a little bit apprehensive because... And I thought, well, my gym class stuff will work here. But she goes, this is why, because there's a lady named Sandy Kimbrough who's great, and she's a listener to the show. So I got this event because of the podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever happened before.
Thank you, Sandy.
Like, there are people who go, oh, I'll check out your podcast. I like your comedy. She wanted to check out my comedy because of the podcast. How do you like that?
I like that a lot.
So thank you, Sandy. So she brings me in, and I'm a little bit, okay. And I thought, well, I've got these gym class stories and gym class jokes that'll work. And then she was like, oh, they're going to kill. But she sent me a note. Do not refer to these people as gym teachers. We don't teach gyms. We teach children.
That's true.
Okay. And so we're physical health teachers or phys ed teachers.
And she might as well have told you.
Yeah.
Call them gym teachers.
Yeah.
How did you? Because now it's out there. And you're
well,
like,
and I've been saying these jokes 500 times the same way. So I had to get in a rhythm of like, okay, it's PE teacher, PE teacher, PE teacher. And a couple of times I think I said gym teacher. And then I had to be like, I know you're not. And that was kind of funny, like making, playing off the awkwardness of it. But it was good. But it does take me back. And I kept thinking, like, they're seeing me now because I'm so vulnerable. And I wonder if these PE teachers look at me like, what a beta male. I'm looking at here.
Like, yeah.
Now he's like working out his vulnerability in front of us. It's even worse.
Right.
It's one thing to not be good at dodgeball. It's another thing to be like in your 40s talking about how bad you were at dodgeball.
Yeah.
And like thinking that's going to bring some kind of healing. Well, it did, John. I got news for you.
I feel terrific.
I never felt more alive.
You know, and that's interesting. I'm the one when I, because, you know, Seti plays a lot of sports. And so I do observe a lot of coaches, you know, and I have a lot of friends who are coaches.
Yeah.
And I have friends who are teachers and those things. And obviously I worked, and you and I both worked with kids for so long. There's a lot for me observing about what an adult, how an adult interacts, not just with the kids, but in that environment.
Yeah.
And how much of it, I think there's no doubt for me, being a youth pastor was a way to be one of the cool kids, probably. That's not why you do it.
Yeah.
But there's a
but
way.
It's built in. It's wired in.
Not a cool kid, sorry. To remain a kid, though, longer.
Oh, I see.
Like, you're in a kid's world. So, like, you don't get to go to camp anymore when you're 21 unless you're a leader or a pastor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
But if you enjoy those things and you see the value of them, then it's a way to sort of extend those experiences. Now, when you start living vicariously through the kids, that's when you've gone too far. Like, you know, you don't need to make them into something that you didn't accomplish. But I just wonder sometimes if, you know, in teaching situations, coaching situations, you know, it's just interesting. And I think they're heroes, those who work with kids and teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Teachers right now, like in Wilson County, are so underpaid. It's unbelievable. Uh-huh. In fact, there was a thing with one of organizations, a great organization, saying, hey, we want to get all the community organizations, including churches, to put on their marquees, we support Wilson County teachers.
Yeah.
And, well, we don't have a marquee.
Yeah.
That's one of the key things. That's one of the marquee things that we did, Johnny.
Right. You didn't put a marquee.
Yeah, because we don't want to have the responsibility of that. But I really, and I don't mean this like in a snarky way, I was very much like, maybe instead of us saying that we love our Wilson County teachers, maybe we should go like lobby for them to actually get paid a decent wage.
Right.
Because we're one of the lowest paid counties in the state. Like, we lose teachers to Metro and to Williamson County all the time.
So you're now currently lobbying. You've become a lobbyist.
I've not done anything about it.
No.
Except go to my own podcast to millions of people to say that I love Wilson County teachers. But, I mean,
Wilson County listeners we have, but hey, if you can.
No, I do think, like, you know, the key to it would
vote
be
yes on Amendment 8 or whatever it is. We don't know what to
make it where you can make more money enough to do this. But no, I just think I'm trying to be careful here. It was I don't know the motivations of other people, adults who work with teens and stuff. But it is,
man, it was interesting because I knew it was going to be a different swath of people that I'm looking out on. I'm like, okay, some of these are college, PE teachers or coaches,
yeah.
And some of them are dance teachers and instructors, which I got nothing for that. I don't know. I did say that I remembered, I made some offhand joke about, I was the kid. I was a weird kid. And then I talk about, like, when everybody flipped the parachute up, I didn't know to run under. You know, I was trying to make a reference to the old parachute game.
Right.
I said, do we still do that? And a few people nodded, like, oh, yeah, we still do the parachute game. Like, evidently, that's still a staple.
They were nodding as they were laughing or just nodding? Hesitancy speaks volumes.
Yeah. That's when the show started.
Like a parachute coming.
It was a parachute coming down, like my career. That's fun. I don't know. But it was like I was kind of apprehensive, but they were so great, and they gave me a star. You know, some people, like, I do events sometimes, and they'll be like, we've got a coin, and they'll coin you.
Yeah.
And they give you a coin with their logo on it. They had a star. It was called the Tapered Star.
Nice.
It's a little award. And it was like, I don't know, in recognition of my... What if I hadn't done well? They always give you these cards before I go on. Have you ever had this happen when you speak somewhere where there's a card, a pre-made thank you card? Thank you, John, so much for being here. Just your gift has meant so much to our people. And you're like, you wrote this in advance.
Before, yeah.
Right?
Know.
There's a lot of confidence going into that. You're like, look... This has to work.
Yeah.
So they already had this plan to give me a star. I wonder if I had bombed, if they'd been like, just put it back.
Yeah,
because they pulled me aside after. Yeah. They were like, hey, before you go. And they did it in front of everybody. And everybody clapped. And I was like, I wonder if she was like, had that cupped in her hand, like, all right, let's see how he does.
I want to go speak at Tapered if it's educators.
That you should speak at
because
Tapered.
Because I was an educator.
Sandy, let's make it happen.
And I'm sorry I made fun of the acronym.
I'll come back too, because I only did like 30 minutes.
Like,
so I'll come back and I'll do another.
You know, my Just Keep Breathing book.
Yeah,
I did some educational things with that because it was non-faith-based.
Right.
I think God's mentioned once in Reggie's story in there, but he was a Christian publisher, but we wrote it for teachers and for kids in situations. But yeah, I had my heart for teachers. My dad was an educator for, 40 years, or 35 years. And it's in Metro schools. So.
Well, let's get this Wilson County thing rolling.
I think I can publicly say I think Wilson County teachers should be paid more.
There's a lot of empty stockings this time of year.
Come on.
For Wilson County educators, and it's upsetting to me.
Yeah.
Do you do stockings at your house?
You know, we used to, and we don't now.
Really?
Like, we didn't even wear them.
You've got a great mantle, though, at your house.
You know, Johnny, passing along this mantle is a heavy thing.
You're wasting mantle space.
Well, we do use the fire some. Maybe she's afraid it's going to catch on fire.
Is this your fear of...
I don't know. I asked her about
damage that you can control, pain that you can foresee.
I think that the previous stockings were of a certain decor.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think we have that decor anymore. So there's a lot of like thought that goes into the decorating.
I was thinking the other day, Christmas is about kids. We know that.
Right.
Christmas is about like being excited for what you're going to get or just the spirit of the season, and then you start to lose it slowly. But then when you have kids, you can kind of get back in that. Like you said, being a youth pastor, you can kind of stay in that excited kid mode.
Oh, yeah, having kids.
When you have kids, you're like, Christmas is a big deal again. So, like, kids today want all this techie stuff. It's some expensive stuff.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I was trying to remember, what is my favorite Christmas gift that I ever got? What do you think your favorite Christmas gift that you ever got was? Like, give me a couple. That you were like, this is it.
It's going to sound cliche, but my Red Ryder BB gun.
A book.
No, my Red Ryder BB gun.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
You really got one?
Yeah, they had them.
That's a thing.
Well,
did they make them for the movie?
Probably.
So it was a prop, basically.
I mean, that was a real BB gun.
And you didn't shoot your eye out.
No.
So that's...
I did shoot a bird one day, and I think I cried. I was like...
Oh, no.
It's like, I want to get that bird. And he always, she never had hit him, and one time I hit him, and I was like, the feeling of, I just shot an innocent bird that you can't eat or anything just for no reason, you know. He probably was fine. He dropped and probably flew away later.
Is that what you want to... What happened is you ran into the house crying.
As a little kid, like, I just maybe took a bird life. So, which even again, I wasn't really that sensitive on those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Again, that was avoidable pain. Come
Oof.
On. Yeah. If you're hunting, that's fine, but I wasn't really hunting, you know, so.
Man. You were too good of a shot.
You don't, hey.
You had a marksman.
I was always.
You're a natural.
I was actually a pretty good shot always, yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that, I know that's surprising.
No, I don't.
But it was.
You shot the bird's eye out.
So I shot. Listen, I would shoot the bird you all the time.
Man, I'll tell you what. You've had a very sordid path. So Red Ryder, yeah. I remember I got a television for my own room one year.
I'm a little surprised your mom let you have a TV in the room because that's a...
Yeah, mom was protective. She was very... Yeah, mom was old school Pentecostal, like on the legalistic side. So she was probably terrified, but also probably... She trusted me. I think I was 13. So maybe there was a thing of like, well, look, you know, we had cable, but it wasn't like we had any channels that I could have watched anything,
yeah,
you know, that she didn't want me to watch. But, I mean, I did a lot, but she didn't know. No, I got that. So that was a big deal. And I think about now, it's a given that your kid will have a television and a computer in their room.
Sadie does not have a TV.
Really?
But she does have a computer.
You have the family TV.
She comes to
you have to come in the family room.
She comes in our room at night.
Oh, she comes in your room.
Like right now, we're in season 5 of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
So you have your own TV. You didn't think about getting Sadie her own TV.
Well, she already has a TV in her hand all day long.
Yeah, but that's a tiny screen.
Yeah, but it's not the size of the screen in
this
your
hand. This is why kids are
it's
all lurched
size
over now.
Of the hand in your screen. Wait.
That's why kids are all lurched over now. Because they're watching
those
screens.
Like, we have limits on our screen time as it is.
But you've not limited your screen time.
Actually, I do limit my screen time.
But you've got a TV in your room and she doesn't. I think it's a double standard.
I think that
let's
she's
talk
not
about,
an adult.
Let's
that's
talk
true.
About
it is a double standard. So, Johnny,
so you think televisions are for adults?
I think that I...
This is like alcohol.
I think...
You're like, when you can handle the responsibility of a television... I'll let you know.
Well, here's the deal. I get all of my homework done without having to be told.
Mm.
Kids can't.
Oh, you think if she would just goof off.
Kids
but
with can't it,
but
do
she's
that.
Got the phone in her hand. She's goofing off anyway.
I clean up my clothes that I haven't been told.
Yeah.
Like, at some point in time.
This feels like we've taken this moment to scold Sadie for no reason.
I say kids in general, though.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying not to add more distractions. Like, all hey, right. plus, I don't. This is something I do believe about television.
Yeah.
Like, I will watch The Office or whatever by myself. But, like, television really is, for me, it's become, I believe, and last night it may be evident that I'm not, but I'm what we call a one-to-one subtype. I still believe in one-to-one subtype. So you have a self-preservation subtype, you have a one-to-one, and then you have a social.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the way you interact. You could be any type, but you have those subtypes.
Right.
So generally, like, I'm about my family or a close-knit group of friends. And so I don't enjoy things by myself very much. I like being alone.
Yeah.
I like sort of recharging alone. But if I'm going to have an experience, I want to have it with a few people. And I don't want them to be strangers or people I don't know that well.
Yeah.
Then I won't enjoy them. But like Sadie and I watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and laughing together, that's a shared experience.
Yeah.
That like enriches us, even though it's something silly and dumb, or they may, quite honestly, it was a little more edgy.
Yeah.
Than I remember.
Right.
But it's just, that's another opportunity for conversation with her. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I would rather her not be in her room watching a screen and me in my room watching, like, I'd rather us, like, if we do this at night before bed, like, hey, we're going to watch something.
Well, in families, you used to have the family computer. If you're going to be on the computer, you're going to be in the den. We're all going to see what you're doing.
Especially protect kids from, yeah.
Well, part of that, too, was everybody was broke. We couldn't afford but one computer.
Right.
I didn't have a computer until I was in my 20s. We just didn't have computers, but...
I probably didn't either. No, I did in college.
Yeah.
But
like, yeah, I can see that. Well, this show's... What do you think this show is? It's one-to-one with an audience. That's weird, right? Like,
this
we're
show?
Experiencing these conversations together one-to-one.
Yeah.
But then we're broadcasting it.
Someone told me this week, who's an avid listener, that... They feel like they hang out with us every week.
That's cool.
That they're in on the conversation. We just don't know it.
Yeah, that's good.
that like the whole time they're kind of interjecting even their own thoughts and stuff because it triggers something. I thought it was very cool. That's what you want.
I don't know what I am. Comedy's weird too because like Seinfeld talked about this about how he's doing a show. He's recording his Netflix special 2 years ago. And one of the first things he says was, this is the first conversation I've had all day.
Oh, wow.
Because he's very introverted. He does like transcendental meditation and stuff to focus. Like he really does TM for 30 years. He's been doing it. That's how he kind of stays centered. He does TM. So he's like, you're the first conversation I've had. He goes, but like, I don't know how to, he goes, I can't talk to any of you, but I could talk to all of you.
Nice.
I thought that was a really interesting way to put it. Like Jerry Seinfeld's not a very like people person.
Yeah.
He's a little bit smug and a little bit just robotic.
Yeah.
But on stage, he can talk to 2,000 people and they go, yeah, I get that. He's nailing my experience as a human, usually. Observational comedy. But if you were to like get him alone in the back of the room, he'd be really awkward at small talk with
yeah,
you.
Well, it's not a conversation with a group of people.
Yeah.
Like there is a different comfort level I have when I'm speaking to the whole church or to a whole group of people.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to interact.
Mm-hmm.
I can go wherever I want to go.
But that's true about that's interesting about the show. And as I've had a couple of clips on social media go like whatever you call viral. Now, I don't know if viral really what it means. It's like megachurch used to be 1,000. Now megachurch has to be like 5,000 or whatever. But viral used to mean like 1 million views or whatever.
Is so megachurch a Decepticon or Optic?
I can't remember.
Autobot. Yeah.
I can't. You have to listen for the theme music.
Okay. Sorry.
But anyway, I can't remember how many views it got, but I've had a couple of videos get like way past my normal audience. And when that happens, you get weird comments.
Yeah.
You get really good comments, but you get weird comments or people that want to leave 3 comments in a row telling you their life story.
That's law of averages. Yeah.
But it's kind of a jarring thing. And you realize what I thought was a monologue is actually a dialogue.
Yeah.
And so
on social media, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even your act, if you're doing it right, it's a dialogue because their laugh is their part of the show.
Sure.
But then sometimes you get somebody that wants to contribute other things, and that's what you'd call a heckler, you know?
Right.
Even if they're not saying mean things, they
want to affect the show.
They're affecting the show. Or they want to be in it. I want to be part of the show.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of be like, all right, how do I handle this? But with social media, yeah, you're right. It's part of it, and you have to be okay with it.
Yeah, and I think speaking, it's like they are, it is a dialogue, but you don't get to see what they wrote down in their notes.
Yeah.
Or you don't get to hear what they told their spouse.
Right, what they say at lunch. Yeah.
Right. So, like, you know, you hope.
Like, what was that all about?
John's come off the rails. There is that, I think, sense of, as I get older, when I get done speaking on a Sunday at church, like, we've created more of a culture where it's no longer about how well the person spoke that day or didn't, which is a lot of American church culture.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, but I'm at a place in life where I go, I know what I just talked about because it was biblically based or whatever. Generally, we're in a very vulnerable space. We're integrating other tools, whether recovery or other things. We're leading it towards authenticity, being genuine, sincere. We're leading towards a place of being willing to be open about your need for grace.
Yeah.
And like that, you know, that shame is removed in Christ and all these things. So I'm really confident that if those things were communicated, then the job was done well, even if I wasn't the best speaker that day. And it's a really weird, like, instead of carrying that, like, that weight or that mantle, as you said earlier, instead of carrying that weight of, I have to make sure that my delivery is perfect. It's almost like if you know your jokes are good,
yeah,
then it's less, it doesn't matter if you nailed the delivery because the joke will carry. I feel that way about the gospel a little bit now. Like, I didn't know, and like a lot of evangelical preachers don't know, like, actually the gospel is the thing.
Yeah.
Not my delivery of it. I need to learn to deliver it in a way they can understand it better.
Yeah.
Not understand me better. I want them to connect with me so that they'll listen to that. But in the end, like, I think these guys, I know I did for years, it's like American church is built around hitting a home run from the stage every week.
Yeah.
You got to have the best show of your life every week, could you imagine?
Yeah, and we have a whole generation probably of pastors who think they have to have like a TED talk every week that's got like all this beginning, middle, end that's perfect, wrapped up with callbacks. Oh, yeah. They're thinking about the skeleton of it more than the content. They're thinking about, all right, I got to make sure that I have a moment where I call back to this, and I got to make sure that it's got three of these.
Yeah. Well, and that's to the previous point then. What I really want is did, through the rest of your week, did you return to that verse? Did you return to that truth?
Yeah.
You know, and in that respect, I mean, we believe the Spirit's the one who's really taking those things and doing something in you with them. So if you're mulling it over, you know, spending more time on it,
yeah,
you know, it's not going to be just because someone's a good speaker. I mean, maybe that gift or that role was used for that, to that yeah. end. But, you know, I do get a lot less compliments because I think I've talked enough about, like, hey, I this is not a place where we want you to feel like that what the pastor did was, you know, and then I had to deal with the fact that no one's walking up right. anymore going, great sermon, like, Dave.
Yeah, mission accomplished.
And I'm like, okay, that's what we want, though. Like, this should be normal. Because there's some Sundays I go, man, I felt really good about that.
Right.
You know. And I'll still ask my wife, mm-hmm. like, hey, I'm not asking because I'm fishing. I don't want any. I'm not. I really don't care on that level. But was that, like, just incomprehensible, you know, jargon that didn't hit at home at all?
Or, and then she just wanders off.
Right. She's like, whoa, boy, look at the time. Yeah. And then she goes,
I've really got to take this.
I got to go stop. I got to shop on Amazon for stockings. Yeah. So, yeah. It but I just want to know, like, did I, was it clearly?
Yeah.
Was it understandable?
Will she give you the straight?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She'll be like, hey, you know, I think she will.
You need to start looking for other jobs.
Oh, believe me. I've asked that. Like, look, do I just need to hang this up?
Oh, like, John, don't go there.
No,
come on.
No, no, no. Like, hey, I'd rather know now. Let's not go another 20 years.
Yeah. 20 years.
That's what I'm saying. I'm only.
God, it's amazing to me you think you're going to live 20 more years.
I'm just about to turn. How old? Do you know how old I'm
turning? I don't know, but we had breakfast together.
You saw. It's okay. I'm taking a higher dose Lipitor now. So
oh,
it's
that's
all
good.
Good. It's all good. It moved from like 10 to 40. So that's almost 30 more.
You know, John, we're running out of time, but I think it's time for us to unveil our new weekly segment called Talk About Then. I enjoy this because it's this week in history, and we get to kind of talk about some cool things that have happened this week and years past. Lore, if you will.
Mm. Well, it's only lore if it's fake, right?
Is it?
Folklore means like it's a made-up story, like a fable.
Well, these are not fables, John.
These are real. We might make them into fables.
You know what? This one is kind of a fable because the first one is December 21st, 2012. The Mayan end of the world. Remember that? The Mayan calendar?
Wow, yeah.
Remember the big panic?
That's as far as it went.
That's as far as it went. And it could just be like the guy got tired with the chisel or whatever. But we're like, we drew some big conclusion from it of like, they knew something we don't know.
Right.
When really it's just a guy who's like, look, I'm done. Yes. There's no way people are going to live longer than...
Long.
Yeah.
Right.
And they had no clue that we were just getting started.
Come on, man.
But yeah, so that didn't happen. But I remember there was even movies about it.
Yeah, if you guys didn't know, that didn't happen.
So yeah, we're still around. So that was 2012, and luckily we're still kicking 10 years later. Elvis meets Nixon. That was a big thing. Remember the big handshake and the? I don't remember it. It was 1970.
Yeah, you weren't born yet.
But the King of Rock and Roll met with U.S. President Richard Nixon. Elvis was wearing a purple velvet suit. This guy. He's like, I'm going to the White House.
But in 1970, that's just fine.
Hold on. A gold belt. This is the best. A Colt 45 pistol.
He carried a pistol?
Into the Oval Office.
And they let him do it.
Yeah. Elvis claimed to have done an in-depth study of drug abuse and communist brainwashing techniques and wanted to lend his assistance. So that's one of the reasons he was there. It was a...
He thought he was helping.
A goodwill...
Maybe he was helping.
Well... I don't know about his in-depth study of drug abuse.
Jeez, <man.
laughs> I got problems with that.
Have you seen the new Elvis movie?
No.
I haven't
Is
either.
It good? I need to check it out.
I haven't either.
The one, Tom Hanks, right? Doesn't he play Colonel Parker?
Colonel.
I don't know. Anyway, he asked Nixon for a Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs badge to add to similar items he had begun collecting and to signify official sanction of his patriotic efforts. So he asked for like government... like authority, like he deputized me basically as
I wonder if it was like a let me be like a the more you know guy for America because I'm the king.
I guess, but maybe he just thought, well, this is what I need to do. I need to lend my platform to this.
You know what? I remember the joke of the day I wanted you to resurrect. It was the Elvis joke.
What was it? Do I have an Elvis joke?
Used to have a... I wonder, you know, if everything Elvis said, he said in that voice. And you were like... So, you know, you get done with dinner and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go get me a piece of pie.
No, John.
Yeah. Like, everything. I'm going to go. And you had like a series.
No,
of them,
that's an old like Mark Pitta thing. That's not
you,
mine.
You never told me that.
Yeah, that's not mine.
You stole someone's joke.
I didn't do it on stage. I just used to say it when we were hanging around.
You said it to make me think that you were funnier than you were. Wow.
It worked.
This is.
Here we are. 25 years of friendship.
Can't get out of it now.
I know.
All right.
It's too late. Yeah, no, it was Mark Pitta. He used to be a comedian in the 80s, and he still is. But he used to have this bit about how, like, Elvis jokes were great because they just stop and start again. And he was like, I wonder if Elvis really talks that way. So,
nice.
It's a great joke. Anyway,
okay.
The first manned moon mission, if you believe that sort of thing, happened December 21st, 1968. It's hard to believe. 68.
Wow.
Apollo 8. So we had, Jim Lovell, who was also on the Apollo 13 mission that almost was doomed, and then they saved it. That's Jim Lovell.
Another Tom Hanks character.
Yeah. So
I'm still fascinated. I believe the moon landing happened. And I'm also fascinated that we were able to pull it off.
You know, I've met a new class of conspiracy people who believe that the flights happened, but that the landing was fake. So that the landing was staged in a studio somewhere to make us all feel like it had happened. But the flights did happen. They just kind of went up in the air and came back. That's a different kind of a, right? That's a new,
I don't know.
It's a new version of,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, they orbited the moon on the 24th of 1968 and returned to Earth on the 27th. While orbiting the moon, they also became the first humans to photograph the Earth rise. So they have photographs that they were there. They were orbiting the moon, photographed the Earth from the
surface. Did you say the Earth rise?
The Earth rise. That's what it's called.
That's what it's called.
The little, peaks over the edge of
Isn't that what we want to happen in this world?
If you believe that sort of thing.
Okay.
How about this one, John? The first feature-length animation with both color and sound. Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. 1937.
I love those old movies, but the music, the soprano choirs are so shrill.
Yeah,
compared to the music that it came into.
It's like it's coming out of one of those old Victrola horns.
It's just like so, you know, and it's just over. But they're amazing.
Do you want to take a guess at how much it cost?
To make?
Yeah.
Or to watch? It was like a dime, I think.
Yeah, probably a dime.
To make, I'm going to guess it cost $3
million. $1.5 million.
Okay.
And many in the film industry predicted it would flop and bankrupt the company.
Wow.
Which, as you know, did happen. Disney...
Yeah,
it's really struggling.
You've never heard of them.
Instead, it grossed $6.5 million, making it the most successful motion picture of 1938, the most successful sound film made to that date.
Wow.
So they had the sound and the animation, and that was like the key. They unlocked it.
And Walt Disney always built upon success. Like, he kept taking chances. I mean, to move from there to eventually, you know, Disneyland, Disney World, these are not things you just step into lightly.
Mm-mm.
Like, these are major risks.
Yeah. It's a... Right.
So every time he won... He would almost
throw
all of it back in.
Have to double down. Have to keep going. And that's not me. I want to coast.
No.
I rest on my laurels.
How can I stretch this out forever?
How can I get some more laurels to rest on? Just put them in a pile.
Right.
The first crossword puzzle, 1913.
Wow.
Arthur Wynn appeared in the New York World.
I can't believe.
New York World's not even a thing anymore. It's like diamond shaped. If I could show it to you, it's like it's not shaped like a traditional crossword. It's kind of weird and funky looking.
I would figure a crossword puzzle was like a ancient thing that we just picked back up
from the ancient Mayans, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they were trying to tell us something. The first basketball game, December 21st, 1891.
Naismith?
James Naismith.
Come on.
You know what he was though? Do you know where he developed the game?
Okay.
I didn't know this.
Hold on. Where he was?
I'm just saying, what was his job?
James Naismith.
So he develops this game. He was a youth pastor. No, he wasn't.
I was going to say he was like a camp director or something.
He was a YMCA instructor.
See, I was close.
You were really close.
I knew he was a teacher. Yeah,
he organized a game between his students in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Wow.
The original game used a soccer ball and a peach basket with the bottom still intact. So that's weird. You had to get up on a ladder.
Wow.
Eventually, they poked a small hole in the basket so they could use a stick to retrieve it. So he didn't even go to the hole.
Let's
just let it go. He was like, but if we poke a small hole, with a broomstick.
Wow.
And he eventually added a net, I guess, or somebody did.
So my friend Jeff McCord was the place kicker for the University of Kansas.
Okay.
And he said, it was funny, he said they were going back for a game, and they went into like the Wall of Fame area,
right,
of Kansas, and it was like Naismith and Wilt Chamberlain, mm-hmm, and all this stuff. And then like his wife and his son were there, and they're looking, and all of a sudden Jeff, their dad, is on the wall, the team, from like 1990 whatever.
Yeah.
Because they won their bowl game.
Yeah.
He goes, there's only been like three Kansas football teams that have ever been to a bowl game and won. Yeah, he goes, right. So it makes it automatically. You're on the wall of fame. You know? So interesting you say Naismith, because I just heard that. He's like, we're next to Wilt Chamberlain and James Naismith.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good company.
Yeah.
The thing I remember about old football footage is when they put the goalpost right at the goal line. And then at some point they moved it. People are always running into that thing.
Yeah, it's a big pole right in the middle.
Yeah. You're just asking for it. Just go across the middle and take a pole to the face.
I guess, though, it was a 10-yard shorter kick back then.
Right. It was if you're on the 30-yard line, it's a 30-yard kick. Now it's a 37-yard or whatever. You got to go back.
Well, you got to go back then from the line of scrimmage as well.
And add so it's 17 yards more.
Is it 17 or 15?
It's 17.
It's 17. It's 10 in the end zone.
Right. And then 7 yards back to give your clearance.
Yeah.
So if you're on the 30, it's a 47-yard kick.
Yeah.
But back in the day, it would have been... You go back 7 yards, it'd be 7 yards more.
Yeah.
But anyway, you'd see so many shots of like just all those old footage of just guys just taking it to the face.
There's still been a lot of guys this year, even in Neyland Stadium, running into the brick walls.
Yeah.
We had that happen quite a few times.
Yeah.
Like, guys,
be careful out there.
Extend these fields. I don't know.
Home Alone.
Really?
Premiered. You know what year?
1992.
Good call.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Wow.
You did it. So this is the 30 year.
Wow.
30-year anniversary of Home Alone.
That was a random... Maybe I'm a genius.
I don't think it's that. Macaulay Culkin, man, that guy was on a run, wasn't he? Uncle Buck. And then got Home Alone.
Yep.
And then they made a couple of like, let's cash in on this kid. He did the Richie Rich. Yeah. I remember when I worked at the movie theater, there was one called Getting Even with Dad or something with him and Ted Danson that bombed.
Well, he had a couple of Home Alone sequels.
Right. But he did. Do you remember this one? Christmas of whatever, 1996, The Nutcracker. He literally did the Nutcracker ballet.
No.
And he was in it.
Was he doing ballet?
I don't know, but it did not. I think 12 people saw it because the people, it's like the Venn diagram again. The people who love ballet don't think Macaulay Culkin belongs
in
a ballet.
Maybe he was breaking into serious theater or something. You know what I'm
saying? He was trying to.
Yeah.
And it didn't go well.
I still think he did all right. His stuff in investments, he should be fine.
Residuals, yeah. He's doing okay. They show that constantly on a loop. Let's see. Sherman takes Savannah in the Civil War.
Ooh.
That's right up your alley.
Yeah, he actually...
Did he burn the whole... No. Burned Atlanta and did all
that? He burned Atlanta, but he saved Savannah.
Oh, okay.
That was like his gift to... If I remember, it was like his gift to Lincoln was to not destroy Savannah. That's why if you go to Savannah today, it's very much preserved in a way that a lot of southern antebellum cities are not, because they were destroyed by Sherman's 600-mile-wide march of destruction from southern Tennessee to the Gulf of Mexico.
That's just
the only way to do it was to just burn everything.
That's too much.
Because they'd been 4.5 years into a war, a little shorter than that at that time. They just destroyed everything, and it was just total mass destruction in order to win the war.
I just think he went too far.
Decimated the South.
Okay, and finally, film star, TV star, Kiefer Sutherland was born 1966.
Wow.
On this week.
Happy
English-born Canadian Emmy-winning actor.
English-born?
English-born.
Does that mean he's born
Canadian,
in England, but
I guess
immigrated to Canada?
Yeah, so maybe it's dual citizenship, perhaps? Maybe even triple? Triple citizenship?
Aren't you a UK citizen either way?
I don't know how that works.
Do you have a separate citizenship as someone who lives in England than you do if you live in other parts of the UK? That's a great question. Or are you just a UK citizen?
Here's some Kiefer trivia. He's worked the rodeo circuit, winning rodeos in Albuquerque and Phoenix.
Since acting,
it
or
says
before?
He has. I don't know. It just says he has.
I need more specifics.
I don't know. Kiefer, if you're out there, be careful.
Yeah. You know, it's a dangerous world in the rodeo. I should know.
They can't get health insurance. So if you ever go to a rodeo or like a PBA event, Professional Bull Riders Association, my wife's been to a few, which is interesting because she loves animals. And I'm like, they rope calves and do things that are like, it's not great. But it's just part of farming and stuff and, you know, being whatever. I'm not trying to be all on high horse
about
it.
Ranching.
I think on a high horse, that's also bad.
It's very dangerous.
You stay low on the horse. It's, be careful. But they do a thing where in the middle of the rodeo, they'll be like, they pass like a offering plate. Or they show a QR code probably now, and they go, hey, none of these guys can get insurance because of their job. So if they break their neck on this, but you're like, yeah, but you're on the bull. Like, I don't know how to feel about it, John. Like, if podcasting could hurt me, and then part of the podcast was asking you to help me because I'm doing a dangerous,
right?
You know, somebody runs in here every 5 minutes and tases me. Well, you shouldn't be podcasting.
Right. Which is a weird thing.
That's a weird podcast.
Right. It's, I mean, it'd probably get a lot of listens. Yeah. It feels, because I do watch Yellowstone, again, not endorsing it.
Yeah.
Just saying, it does feel like a very...
It romanticizes that life a little bit.
It feels like a very uncowboy thing to do, but I understand why they do it. I want people to have health care.
Oh, you mean they should just be like...
But they, yeah, like...
Rub some dirt on
it. Kevin Costner would be like, hey.
Yeah. I don't think... Well, I think maybe his character would. Kevin Costner, the actor, would be like... he'd be really upset. Somebody carry him to his trailer.
Oh, man.
He plays a rugged person very well, but he's been in Hollywood long enough. He's probably got soft hands. Let me just say. He moisturizes.
Let me tell you something. Harrison Ford, he's pretty old now.
Yeah.
And he's still terrific.
Oh, yeah.
He's still terrific.
Well, and they're both handsome guys. You know, that's the thing. That's the big double standard in Hollywood is like men are allowed to age.
Yeah.
You know, and they have laugh lines and they have, you know, it's like, but women, it's like you're 40. They put you out to pasture. Again, more farm references.
Wow.
And it's not fair, John.
Well, they do a good job there of the female co-stars or the female stars, and they're the co-stars.
Yeah.
I mean, is it, oh, well, Faith Hill was a really good actor. Like, that's her first, you know, Tim McGraw had acted.
Right.
But that was
He's
really
been in
first.
Friday Night Lights and some other things.
And they played a married couple in 1883.
Got to.
I thought she was terrific. Like, I thought
Did
she
you
was.
Feel the chemistry and the sizzle there?
Yeah. I mean, well... Yes, it was more like about their kids, you know,
yeah.
and their journey. And he was a former Confederate soldier,
right?
But she, I mean, it's rugged, and they're like helping a group of, where were they immigrants from? I want to say might have been German immigrants.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, it may have been one of the nations around there who are trying to get to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to cross literally the continental United States. I mean, and they're just dying in by the droves. I mean, snake bites and, you know, there's...
Then the Donner Party happened in Oregon? Wasn't that? No.
I don't, you know what? I don't know a lot about
it. Was that Oregon?
I think it might have been. Sorry. That's not a thing I've studied.
Snake
a
bite would have been preferred to that.
Well, but there's wars going on between, yeah. you know, indigenous nations
sure.
in the United States during that time. I mean, there's all kinds of things, but I thought she did a great job. I mean, really, really, and across the board. In fact, a lot of that show is focused more on the female characters.
I'm going to check it out now that you've endorsed it.
I'm not endorsing it because it's got stuff, guys. I'm saying it's not something, back to Johnny's previous point, like I wouldn't let my kid watch it right now.
You're such a coward.
It's, you think maybe I've compromised?
Just have a take.
Maybe I've compromised.
And just live with it.
I can't, Johnny. That's okay. Sort of the whole thing. Like this morning we were at IHOP for breakfast and I was going to order what I always get.
Right.
The spinach and mushroom omelet.
But you said, no, I'm branching out.
I'm getting something else. Johnny, you order. And then you ordered and she came back to me and I go, spinach and mushroom omelet. I got overwhelmed by the menu.
She looked disappointed in you. She was like, I already wrote this down and scratched it out once.
Right.
And you're wasting my time.
Yeah. She was like, you want the fruit? And I was like, because she knows me. And I was like, no, I want the pancakes because that's where we are right now.
And then she was like, I'm spitting in these. You know that. You're like, yes, ma'am, I understand.
Sir, I'm looking at you. You should get the fruit. And I was like, oh, wow. That's bold and true. And you know what, listener? We hope that you have found the entire podcast to be both bold
and fruitful.
And true.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say fruitful.
You should go check out our other episodes, though.
Talk about that podcast.com or wherever you get your fine podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Or your not so fine podcasts.
That's, just, you know, that's fine, too.
Whatever. Go check it out and check out Johnny's Linktree and or just go to johnnyw.com. There's all kinds of amazing stuff there. He's got clips going out all the time that are fun to watch, fun to share. You should share them.
And new tour dates going up, too, so you can come see me live. I'd love to say hello.
Oh, yeah.
to all of our great
listeners.
Got
a lot of shows coming in 2023 that you're going to be a part of. So, got some. Always got book stuff going. Today, I'm promoting More Than Your Number by Beth McCord and Jeff McCord, good friends of mine. Best Enneagram stuff. If you're new to the Enneagram, go check out More Than Your Number. You can get it at Amazon or anywhere. It really is worth your read, and the reviews are amazing. Amazing about this book. So check it out. We also want to take just a second to thank our team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find dozens of other great podcasts on their network, and they got shows about all kinds of different stuff. So check out lifeaudio.com. We thank you for spending the time with us today that you did, and we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Ted, what do you want to do today?
Well, Ashley, I've always got work to do, naps to take, but I have a better idea. How about we invite everyone to listen to the Team Us podcast?
I love that idea. Let's do it right now. Hi, everyone. We're Ted and Ashley Slater, and we'd love for you to join us as we talk about teamwork in marriage.
We share how grace, commitment, and cooperation can help couples live the everyday moments of marriage together.
To listen, go to lifeaudio.com and search for Team Us.